process, not outcome. There are no silver bullets that make it really easy overnight.
Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, proudly brought to you by L.L. Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged, 707 Walnut, always at llpavorsky.com. I am Spike Eskin, along with the Sixers' fifth healthy big man, Mike Levin. Hi, Mike.
I feel great.
Yeah, you ready to get some minutes?
Yeah, yesterday was actually my first day the show ended.
Oh, congrats.
Thank you. And so I got a massage. So I do feel great.
Oh, wow. You know, yeah. I've had a few massages in my life, and they're always a little weird to me. It takes me so long to get comfortable with it that someone is touching me, like a stranger is touching me like that, that by the time I've finally relaxed, it's over.
Yeah.
I'm a little weird about having people touch me like that. But there
are... Some people are. I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah. podcast available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and SoundCloud. You can get all of those links at rightstorickysanchez.com. Reminding you, of course, that the Rights to Ricky Sanchez lottery party is on May 16th at Xfinity Live. Reminding you as well that tickets are on sale for Bust the Process 2, which is our bus trip to Washington, D.C. to see Sixers, Wizards on January 14th. $85 gets you a ticket to the game, the bus ticket, snacks on the bus, a photo on the court at center court at the Verizon Center. You get to shoot a free throw at Verizon Center. And we'll be having a happy hour in D.C. and one at Xfinity Live when we leave for the bus. Also, people have asked, and the links are up there, if you live in D.C., there's like a ticket and a commemorative T-shirt from Cheesesteak Tees, working on the design with them now. There is a everything but the bus option for $35. So that is on rightstorickysanchez.com. Would you mind? So we still get the occasional relationship advice question on the email, but this one was from a member of our fine military and related to Bust the Process. Would you mind if I ask your opinion on this guy?
Let's do it.
Okay, this is from I won't say his name.
Are we gonna do the relationship advice music?
Do you want to? I'll do it now.
Yeah,
sure.
Plug it in.
Okay. There it is. Okay, relationship advice music.
I keep my heart under my pillow with my teeth and other lies. I've been waiting on your halo just to shine the light. Just to shine.
All right. Dear Spike and Mike, longtime listener / truster, due to school and joining the military, it's been many years since I've lived in the Philadelphia area where I was born and raised. During those years, not only have I lived away from Philadelphia, but I haven't even lived near an NBA market. So it's been a while since I've caught a Sixers game. The military moved me to the D.C. area this past summer, so as soon as tickets went on sale, I scooped up two tickets to Wizards Sixers. Initially, I held out a little hope that my girlfriend would want to go, but relationship protocol dictated I give my girlfriend of 2.5 years the option of using the second ticket first before reaching out to my buddies. To my surprise, she said she wanted to go. She didn't grow up in Philadelphia and is not much of an NBA fan. Fast forward to now, Bust the Process is coming to DC. My initial impulse is to sell the two tickets and repurchase in the Ricky section. However, now that my girlfriend expects to go, I don't know how I can do this. She knows about the podcast enough to think we're weird, and I've explained the process to her at great length, although she doesn't understand my emotional connection to it. However, for reasons that process trusters in relationships deal with every day, I don't think it would sit well if I make her sit in a section with over 100 process trusters who are screaming, holding signs, wearing t-shirts, generally forcing her to finally confront the fact that her boyfriend is in a cult. I also don't think it'll go over well to ask her not to come so I can sit with my people. How do I keep my relationship intact but still help bring the process to D.C. Is the best case scenario to keep my current tickets and just enjoy being able to watch you all, albeit from afar, without a t-shirt?
So, great question.
Yeah.
Age-old problem to have.
Yep.
I would say... What day is the game on? Is it a weekday or a weekend?
Weekend. It's Saturday, January 14th.
Oh, well, then you for sure just get, buy her other things, another thing to do that night, like a show or a concert. Hey, I bought you these tickets, surprise. I'm going to go do this culty thing that you're not going to pay attention to.
Wow, I was not expecting that. I have entirely different advice. You could do that, and we would welcome you with open arms. I do think the right move is to... Look, I don't want you to miss out on it completely. So what I would tell you is that I would keep your tickets. I would maybe bring her along for the happy hour for 10 minutes so you can experience it a little bit, and then go sit in your regular seats. That would be my... And the t-shirt, I don't even know, man. I'll sell you a t-shirt. I'll make sure you get one of the shirts. Now,
are we going to put it... We'll put it on online after, probably, right?
Well, we didn't do it with the Nerland shirt. I don't know if that was a conscious decision or if it was just I forgot to tell the cheesesteak teased guys to do it. How about this? I will put this shirt up. I'll make sure the shirt goes up on cheesesteaktees.com afterwards. So, but to your point, if there was something that she would like to do that night better than this, that you could buy her tickets for as a gift to tell her she doesn't have to experience Sixers with you, that is a good plan too. But I would make sure that that is something that she's really, really going to want to do, or else she'll see right through your ruse.
Yeah, you know? Well, or you just come up front and say, hey, so here's the thing. We can either go. I mean, I think if you present her the situation,
yeah,
and she sees that you are sympathetic to not wanting to force her into this cult.
Yep.
And if she's like, no, take one of your other friends, or if she's like, yeah, let's go, let's be weird, then it's either way. I think secrecy is not the right move, but strategic asking and letting her decide or giving her options, I think will make it like all things above board.
And here's what I would say as well, is that on the bus to the process trip to Brooklyn, I don't remember how many couples there were, but I would say it was at least four or five. And the happy hour was totally normal, aside from it was a bunch of us, but it was a normal happy hour. It was pretty fun, I think, for even a person who doesn't know about any of this. I think sitting in the section for her might be a little much, you know. That might not be fun for her. But the rest of the trip, I think, oh, and you don't even need to go on the bus because you live in D.C. So it might not be as bad as you think. We make it seem a lot weirder than it actually is in real life. I think in real life, it's mostly just fun. It's just people getting together and fun. And as far as...
It's pretty weird.
Well, it's weird, but it's not like... It's weird that it's happening, but it always seems pretty harmless to me. Like, it's not creepy weird. It's just weird, if that makes any sense. And yeah. By the way, though, the bus the process tickets, I think it'll either be till we sell out the buses or January 1st, and then after that I'm just going to pull them off because I don't like the stress of having to sell bus tickets. But it is safe to say that this one will be bigger than the Brooklyn one too. And finally, before we get to actual content, would like to thank once again Amos Lee and his musical director, Jaron Olefsky, for our new Trust the Process intro song, which they this week redid two more times so it would sound better on the podcast, which is true commitment from people who clearly have better things to do than make our theme song. So, all right, here's what I have on the list. You tell me. Obviously, top on the list is... the Nerlens Jahlil Embiid thing from last night, both the game and Nerlens' comments afterwards, and the fun situation we're in. That it's sort of funny. It's taken until December of 2016 for all of these guys to be around, but here they are.
Here they are.
And surprise, it sucks. I also wanted to talk about we'll briefly touch on the Raptors game, the Pistons game. I wanted to ask you about Ilyasova's nickname, the Professional. Because I have some mixed feelings on it. The Jared Bayless injury, which if you were listening to this podcast, you would have known that surgery was going to end his season before everybody else. I wanted to talk to you about Dario playing the three. And of course, in the second half, this is very big, in the second half of the podcast, we will discuss the Retweet Armageddon Congress, which we have almost completed. We will give out the names and we will discuss your chance to, that's right, be in the retweet Armageddon Congress. Your chance. This is the, so. I told Derek last night, Bodner. I was like, I forget what I think I texted him the thing about the retweet Armageddon Congress, and I was like, we've slowly turned the podcast into a podcast about the podcast rather than about the Sixers. So if we decide we don't like the Sixers anymore, no one will ever even notice. We can just. It's a process. So, all right. So, how do you want to attack this? You want to talk about what Nerland said? Do you want to talk about Embiid on the court with Okafor? Like, how do we, the game itself last night, how do we do any of this?
Let's talk about it all.
Okay. Well,
let's talk about it all. What were your feelings when you saw Embiid and Jaleel playing together? What's your mind? What's your headspace like?
Can I tell you this? And I was thinking, I'm glad you asked that, actually, Mike, my friend Mike, because I was thinking about this in the car yesterday. All of this is making me like the Sixers less.
Yeah.
Like, I have a lot less joy watching the games. I'm not blaming Okafor for it. Like, it's nobody's fault anymore. I don't even want to attack how Okafor makes everyone he plays with worse. But that's not the point of this. The point of it is that, like, I am, you know, I'm sure it started with Hinkie leaving, right? But, like, I feel like my fandom a little bit has been chipped away at it, and I just want to watch them play basketball and be as good as they can be right now. And this whole thing is just, like, is such an annoying clusterfuck. It is stealing a lot of the joy that I got out of. And we're talking about a person who got joy out of watching a team who was horrible for 3 years, you know? Yeah. And a team that's horrible this year too, occasionally getting joy out of it. But it's robbing me of the joy, and I just wish it would end.
Yeah.
You know?
There's too many big men.
Yeah, well, that's
on the Sixers. That is the problem here.
Well, but I do think that without trying to attack Jaleel, is that, like, him, the way he, the his specific skill set, why don't we say that, makes it an even bigger problem, I think. Because, like, you can't it has stolen the joy out of it for Embiid very quickly. Like, he's been very clear, without saying anyone's name, that he doesn't like having to – essentially, when Okafor is on the court – he has to play like point guard. Like, the only time he's creating anything is when he gets the ball. You know, I love the pump fake top of the key three thing, but, like, that's really the only time he's creating anything. And a couple of times last night, if you go back and watch, I didn't watch the game till this morning. I had a dinner last night, but I watched the second quarter, and I even watched it twice just to rewatch this. Every time Embiid would even post up with Okafor on the court, Okafor was standing under the hoop in the paint while Embiid was posting up. Which is like what?
Which
is
actually
going
worked
on
out a couple times because he caught a couple, because when people have to double him, he's open underneath and just can, like, lay it in off a miss or whatever.
But it's so
It's not setting anybody up for success.
No, not Okafor and, even.
Yes, especially not Okafor, because Embiid can step outside, but Jaleel, he's better. He's obviously not a good rim protector, but he's better than he was last year at it. He's still not – he's starting to rebound the ball better, but still is bad at it. But making him guard anybody in space is just a problem. He doesn't hedge at all. Any pick and roll, they can get whatever shot they want out of it. It's good for nobody. And I get the idea of having to try it. I get the idea that, you know, we're still not super concerned over wins and losses, so why not? And maybe you can make it work, but it just doesn't seem like I think an Embiid Nerlens lineup would be interesting, because both guys can protect the paint and step outside and guard somebody in space.
And not for a long time, but you could definitely do it for 10 minutes a game or 8 minutes a game without it hurting anything, I think.
Exactly. But with Jaleel, it's saying, hey, you either have to guard in space or protect the rim while the guy who should be doing it is doing something else. And then the lane is more clogged. I mean, it turns – on offense, Embiid becomes like Ryan Anderson when Jaleel is in.
Yeah. And that's not what you want. With no,
it's minimizing. It's minimizing it. And it's, why would you do that to your best player and possibly like future top five player in the league?
And it's making, you know, it like even let's take Nerlens out of it for a second. The starting of the Twin Towers lineup, it has so little chance of succeeding. I said to Tom Moore once. Tom Moore was like, "Well, they have to try it and they have to see it because you never know." And I was like, "Well, like you don't know for sure that your car isn't going to turn into a boat if you drive it into the ocean. But like you can be reasonably certain about how that's going to end up."
Yeah.
Like I don't see, you know.
Yeah, the you never know defense is a little – it's the same like, well, they could make the playoffs. You never know. It's
yeah,
like, well,
right.
I guess hard to argue with that.
Yeah. And I don't – and here's the other thing is like, are there moments where it looks good on the court having them play? Sure. But – if you put anybody at like next to Embiid, like odds are, I don't think it's like too. Ilyasova might be playing the best he ever played, and part of that probably has to do with playing with Embiid too. I think you could put anybody at the four. The question is like, are they okay offensively with those two at the four and the five? Yeah, I guess. But could you pick literally any other person on the Sixers who could play four and put them at four, and would it be better? And I think the answer is yes. I can't think of a player who you could put at four who it would be worse than Okafor with Embiid. That is on the Sixers, right? Ilyasova would be better. Saric, it would be better. Noel, it would be better. Covington, it would be better. Anybody we could put at four would be better. Holmes, it would probably, maybe, I don't know if it would be worse, you know? So, and then, of course, it gets even worse because not only is it bad on the court and bumming out Embiid, but now Nerlens, who is clearly pissed off and doesn't want to be there, played 8 minutes, complained about playing 8 minutes, basically said he doesn't care who he plays with anymore as long as he can play, and he's too good to play 8 minutes, and he's right, and I wish he wouldn't say it as clearly as he said it, but he's not wrong, you know?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, no, there's no secret. I don't know what Nerlens' end game is. I think he's just like pissed and is talking, but like I think he's assuming something has to happen by the trade deadline. And as we've seen since, I mean, how long have we been trying to trade one of them? Maybe last deadline, it's not a certainty that anyone's going to get traded. So it feels like it should be, but to some extent, rightfully so, the front office is not just going to trade him for nothing. Although at this point, I would like them to trade him for nothing. I somewhat admire their restraint, but also want them to make a fucking deal. And Nerlens handling this more judiciously might be better for a possible trade. But I don't think he's thinking that. I think he's just thinking, people ask me questions, I'm pissed off, I'm going to say it.
Well, I think his mindset is probably, hey, I handled this judiciously in the offseason when you told me I was going to get traded or Okafor was going to get traded, and you didn't do it. And so what did that get me? You know, that got me here, and here we are, the position that you promised me I wouldn't be in. And then I even went and got some nonsense surgery in hopes that something would happen, and it's still not happening. So
yeah.
I wish he would too. You know, sometimes I wonder, well, and here's another thing. And just to go back over all of this, I'm not looking to, there is blame that goes to Hinkie for drafting Okafor. There is blame that goes to Colangelo for not making the deal. There's blame that goes to Nerlens for how he's handled it at this point.
But you Nerlens' agent who wouldn't let Kristaps Porzingis meet with this team.
Right. Off. I think like, but when you go back to this summer, when Colangelo came out and basically publicly said that they have too many big men and it's not going to work. You know, what everyone wanted, he's going to talk and talk and talk. And now, by the way,
he hasn't spoken in months.
Yeah, there's a mystery injury that that everyone knew except the public, by the way. Everyone knew that Jared Bayless had torn ligaments. Everyone knew. And everyone knew he was supposed to get surgery except the public who was getting a wrist soreness excuse for weeks and weeks and weeks, like all that. And he's so if he, I don't know if he hadn't talked over the summer, if we would be in a different situation, but he has essentially admitted that this is not going to work too. So I sometimes wonder if instead of, and I don't know the answer to this, but right now, by the way, other teams are attempting to knock down Noel's value by feeding the he's a bad egg information, by the way, to Woj, because he knows they have to trade him. Yeah. Part of me wonders if instead of pretending that we're going to keep all of them or that they can play together, which is nonsense, if you just said, hey, like, we're going to trade him, best offer gets him. And make it, because I remember when the Nuggets were going to trade Carmelo Anthony. Now, he only wanted to go to the Knicks, and everyone knew he was only going to go to the Knicks. But them basically making a public thing out of it and eliciting other offers from places, I think made the Knicks trade as much as they possibly could for him. Like, I wonder if the tact isn't to say, all right, who's going to offer us the best thing? And make, even if there's two or three teams that are interested in both, make one of them blink, you know? I wonder if that's the best way to do this.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't know how your boy Brian handles this kind of thing.
Oh, he's if my he's, boy now.
He's the man of action. So we've been waiting for action. And everybody wants action. And he's just sort of hanging out.
Would you say it's time for some action? Would you?
It's time for some action.
There you go. Well, and it makes it hard to even talk about the game last night, which was shitty, without, like, all I can think about is this. Really?
It was a shitty game. Before we get to that, it was nice to see Nerlens play again.
Yes.
We haven't talked about that since.
Yes,
I mean,
both times.
Even though he looks very rusty inside. He had that one spin move. That was nice.
Yep.
And then the other game, he had a nice little dunk finish. But he still, obviously, is a huge impact the game hugely on the defensive end, but sometimes offensively he's still like he hasn't gotten offensively as smooth or even close to smooth as over the years as you would have hoped. He's rusty for sure, but at a certain point you would think his like one leg is like a little longer than the other one, and he's never like totally balanced or a set. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I wish he would have, you know, last year I think sucked too. You know, he's only had one year where he's been a center. You know, he was barely a center last year. So I don't know. I he'll never be super smooth, but I do believe that he can be effective in what he's good at if the situation is right. And I'll tell you, the other thing is that his hair being the way it does now makes him look less skinny, I think. He looks less dangly with the shorter hair, I think. Yeah.
Interesting. I miss the flat top.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
It was nice to see him, though. And I wish, really, at this point, instead of playing any of these games, I would just rotate Nerlens and Okafor game to game and make one of them the backup center one game and then make the other one the backup center the other game.
Sure. And just treat it like an audition.
Yeah. You know, like rather than trying to play this fucking, you know, I don't know. Whatever.
Seems fine. I've been taking some heat because of how much I like Rashawn, but like he's good enough to be playing NBA minutes, and the fact that he's going to be like DNPCD for a while is upsetting because he's good. I mean, he deserves to keep improving. He's the real deal. That's all I'm saying. He's also, weirdly enough, the oldest out of the four of them.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, it's all so crazy. They're all so young. It's unbelievable, really. What else is there really to say about the game? I don't even know. Like,
that was once in a while. Look, so we've been doing this for
100 years.
Three plus years.
100 years.
And so we know our own rules. We know not to watch the games, all of them. We know, like, they're bad. Don't expect them to not be bad. Which is, by the way, also how I watched the Eagles this year. And so when people changed it up, we don't talk about the Eagles, but they're bad. Teams are bad. Teams that are bad are bad. And occasionally they don't look bad, but usually they're bad. But the Sixers have a way, more than the other sports teams, of sort of just like curling up next to me and for one game every like 2 or 3 weeks, like really pissing me off.
Yeah.
And so like I'm finding myself watching this game last night and I'm just like screaming at the TV. And it's like, what am I doing? They won 10 games last year.
Yeah. I was making fun of Joe DeCamera, who works on our radio station, has watched The West Wing in its entirety 12 times. And I added up how much time that was. And even like if you take out the commercials, it is 60 days of watching The West Wing. And I made fun of him that he has wasted 2 months of his life watching The West Wing. But then I thought about that as I was woke up early this morning to watch this
in a cold sweat.
Yep. And I was like, oh no, I'm way worse.
Yeah, I'm way worse.
Because at least The West Wing was good. You know, like I'm sure there were some – I've never even seen it, but I'm sure that it's widely recognized as a good show. I'm sure some episodes were better than others. But really, at the very least, it's like watching a 50-win team, you know? Maybe not a championship team, but it's probably a 55-win team. Like, what have I done, you know? And I'm like, I watched parts of that game over again last night. It's like – when I'm on my deathbed, this is going to be a really, really questionable part, I think.
Yeah, you watched the series Anger Management 7 times in its entirety.
Yeah, yes. It was a bad game last night. Watching everybody play defense, actually, the guards who are always bad at defense, but were particularly bad at defense. And I'll tell you something else. I don't have a problem with Gerald Henderson at all. But do any of his baskets come in the flow of the offense, or are they all just like two guard one-on-one buckets, like followaways? Like,
He had that. I think the first play of the season, he had an alley-oop.
Yes, monster alley-oop. But there hasn't been one since.
I think the only one. Yeah. I think that was it.
It's so funny. Sergio guarding anybody is sort of atrocious. Like last night, though, it was bothering me. Everything was bothering me.
Some games you're just like, because the Lakers are bad. And the Lakers, first of all, the Sixers missed every shot inside. They missed every single one. It's incredible how they found different ways to miss layups and miss putbacks. It was very good. Although Covington's putback slam at the end was really nice. It was cathartic a little bit. I don't know if you watched all the way to the end.
Yeah, does he ever miss a three other than short? It's always short. Every time it's short. Unless he occasionally will have like a super brick where it goes off the backboard. But yeah. Every shot, you know it was coming up short. Every single one of them.
I was wondering this. Who when they shoot any shot, doesn't matter mid-range or three, who do you feel most confident in that it's going to go in at this point in time? When they rise up to shoot, who do you feel – where do you feel like it's – who's like your most
– I know this goes against what I would normally say about this person, but I'm mostly confident in Ilyasova's shots.
Interesting.
It's Ilyasova or Embiid, but like it's mostly Ilyasova. What about you?
It's either Embiid – it's either Embiid, but – and right now it's Stauskas. I swear to God, he rides up. Covington, I no faith. Dario, it always seems like he's been obviously shooting well. And he one shot last night, he like pulled up like from like 27, and it was like easy, buddy. But honestly, it's Stauskas when he goes up. There's a confidence that he's rising up in, and I'm drinking it up, buddy.
Do you think, what are the odds that the day after the trade deadline, all these guys are going to be here?
Oh, Jesus. It's what are we, 2 months away or so? Yeah, 2 months away. I mean, pretty decent.
I think
the odds are pretty decent. I could see them trading like a – I could see them not trading Jahlil or Nerlens because they don't find the right whatever, and then but trading like Dario instead.
Right, I could see
and
that.
It being like, well, we got rid of one. It's like, wait, that wasn't the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to say about the other two games, in that like the Raptors game was just like a slightly less shitty version of the Lakers game, and the Pistons game, I don't know if that I've ever seen a team more disinterested in playing.
I forgot the Pistons game was this week.
Yeah,
that was a great game. They looked great that whole game.
Yeah, well it. And it always feels good to either beat George Karl or Stan Van Gundy, because they're both.
those are the two coaches that it feels good to beat. Yeah. If Doug Collins started coaching a team again, it would feel better to beat him.
Yes.
But until that happens, these are the two coaches that we have to beat. And we've beaten Van Gundy so many times since he like talks shit. It's the best.
And just so in case you're new this year or whatever, those are the two coaches who have specifically, like every other coach has done the good thing where they're like, wow, that team tries real hard, blah, blah, blah.
Or Brett Brown's done such a tough job, like getting all those young kids together, that kind of thing, which is true.
But Stan Van and George Karl publicly were like, that's an abomination for the league, and it really, really fucking made me hate both of them. So I'm glad every time we beat one of those two dipshits.
It's very good. TJ, by the way, near triple double.
Yeah,
TJ's had a great few games. On the podcast last week, I said he just needs one really good game to boost his confidence, and guess what? He had it. He's back.
The triple
TJ forever.
At the triple-double game, it was funny because, first of all, it was almost the Iguodala triple-double where you just get 10 of everything, 11 of one thing.
Which used to be, I think this was Tim Legler, I believe, if I remember my Liberty Ballers history correct. Tim Legler called that a pathetic triple-double. and so we used to, when MCW almost got one or whatever, it used to be called all the pathetic on Liberty Ballers.
Pathetic triple double.
So it came very close to a pathetic.
I also like the. So you mentioned the TJ Dario thing last time, and then it happened again.
Yeah.
In the Pistons game, and then the Sixers have responded by, and I have to give Kurt Wears Hats credit for this, because I imagine he's responsible on some level, or our old friend Charlie Widows, who is controlling digital over there for the Sixers. I feel like every other Sixers tweet is a picture of TJ and Dario getting along now. like them palling around, them doing having a jump ball or something. It's like, look, everything's fine. They're fine. It is really funny to think about those two hating each other too. So,
yeah, it's a fun pairing. There's not much difference between doing like digital for a sports team and like social media for like a senator.
No,
it's very similar. I think it's pretending everything's okay.
Yes.
And posting pictures of two people who, you know, don't like each other, but are trying to pretend like they do.
Yeah. That's a very funny, analogy. I think it's a tough thing because people always rip like the sports team Twitter for acting like everything's fine when it's not. But like,
which I have in the past, prior to I don't know if Max is running it at this point. I've never actually like fully talked to him about it.
Yeah,
because the original Sixers, and I'm sure it was just like, hey, you're not allowed to do anything. It was like 2011 or whatever. You're not allowed to like have a personality, and the Sixers Twitter has gotten better, and pro sports Twitter has gotten better incrementally over the last few years. But before, it was just like Sixers down 27, or like Evan Turner drains the mid range.
Yeah.
Sixers down, cut the lead to 19.
Yeah,
and it was like hashtag PHI at
DT
and NJ or something like that, and it was like. It was like, who's searching that time? What are we doing? What is the purpose of this? Everyone's just posting like hashtags as if like, oh, well, that's what we have to do. No, there's a lack of understanding of the whole system. So, but yes, it's gotten better. And I do want to see Kurt Wears Hats work in politics now.
I've decided. Yeah, yeah. And it's funny. I think the Sixers Twitter has settled into a comfortable. I don't like when brand Twitters have too much of a personality, because it's all the same like snarky like. It's like the same person is running the Twitter for all of the brands who is funny.
True.
And it's just not funny anymore. So
there's like a level of funny, like vaguely pop culture-y.
Yeah.
Lots of GIFs.
Yeah.
And sort of like somewhat talking in some slang, but not too much. Like a couple expressions. It's everyone's kind of got the like, this is safe funny.
Yes, I'm fine, and I'm fine with that. You know,
yeah,
you
don't have to... yeah. I think occasionally it gets a little bit too much, where it's like, all right, guys, like I don't need to see like the Jazz and the Spurs Twitters talking to each other. I'm
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, right. I don't. Yes, you're not a person. You're a.
yeah.
You know. Yeah. All right. So let's talk about our sponsor real quick. Come back and talk about the Ilyasova nickname, the Bayless injury, and then reveal the retweet Armageddon Congress. All right.
All right. Great.
All right. You know, LL Pivorsky and LL Pivorsky Jewelers have been the only sponsor of the Right to Ricky Sanchez podcast, and that is for good reason, because he is just as weird as all of us. Mike and I continue to get emails from people, from customers and now friends of LL, who go in there for a gift or for an engagement ring or something like that, and just walk away just like saying that the experience is even better than we even painted it, which is insulting because we paint it as a pretty good experience, but I'll take it for LL. LL has now sold 26 engagement rings to Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners, and the number just keeps growing. Look, he is open every day through the Christmas season, and I wonder if he's open. He can't be open Christmas Day, is he? I mean, as a... You would think if he's doing that, this Hanukkah goes over Christmas.
I bet he's open Christmas Eve.
Yes,
and not Christmas Day.
Anyway, he is, as everyone tells us.
We're just guessing at his hours.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you can go to llpivorsky.com or call him and find out his hours, 215-627-2252. And here's the deal. If you need to talk about an engagement ring, Lee will make the time. Whenever you need to do it, whenever you want to set up the appointment, and everyone who sends us a note, it's the same thing. I can't believe how much time he took with me. I can't believe how nice he was. I can't believe we talked about Rashawn Holmes most of the time. That's basically the email every time. And everyone walks away happy. So the store is at 707 Walnut. You can find them on Twitter at LL Pivorsky. As I mentioned, you can just call and make an appointment. If you're going to buy an engagement ring, I would make an appointment, 215-627-2252, or send him an email from llpivorsky.com. He is a good friend. He is our sponsor. And as the official jeweler, I have to change this in the website now. As the official jeweler of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, he makes generous donations to the Alzheimer's Association of the Delaware Valley. And I'm sorry, I forgot what you changed yours to, because I didn't change it.
It's the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence.
Okay, and I'll put that in the post from now on. I forgot to do that.
Yeah. So. All good. And instead of the tagline, can we read that story that we got, the one I really liked, the guy from Tennessee?
I don't think I remember that one. Did that one come to me too?
Yeah, it's the guy with the boss. The girl, his girlfriend, go to his boss, right? All right, I'll just try to tell it really quickly. Yeah. I don't remember it word for word, but... girlfriend, guy who's from Philly, now lives in Tennessee.
Okay.
He got his girlfriend on board with the Sixers and started listening to the podcast, and so she generally is getting it from time to time. And then I think she saw her boss. She walked into her boss's office or whatever, and he has like a Sixers jersey or something.
Yes, but this wasn't hanging. An LL story. This was not an LL story.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Fuck. And I forgot how it's not. I don't know why I had this queued up. Anyway, but it's a good story. And LL likes good stories.
Yeah.
So here we go. But she told, so she saw the thing in the six, the jersey hanging in his office. And she took a shot and asked if he was down with TTP. And the boss said, confusedly, yeah, you know Lickface,
yeah,
which is a crazy shot to take.
Yes, in the middle of nowhere.
It's like in Nashville, isn't it?
Yes. When I wrote back to him, he lives in New York now. I wrote back to him, I was like, just so you know, you and I say that to each other every week, and it's awkward every time. And we invented it. And when I have to do it in person, I'm like, oh my God. I mean, I'm glad that it exists, but to have a person do it in that situation is major guts. Major guts.
Yeah. So it's very impressive. More than I have, by the way.
That story, by the way, had nothing to do with
No, it did. But I do love Lee, and yeah. I love that story. So there you go.
All right, real quick, your thoughts on the forced nickname for Ilyasova, the professional.
Okay. So generally, nicknames are bad.
Right.
It's 95% of nicknames are bad. Either you give them to yourself or they're just bad. I used to, when I played WrestleMania, the game WrestleMania on, I guess I probably played it on like N64. So you give yourself a thing. I was the poster boy, which I think is a really good. And I changed my middle name to my first name and Michael to Michaels. So I was the poster boy, Harris Michaels.
Yeah, that's a good name.
Pretty solid.
Yeah.
I was probably like a, like very with the company and very like that kind of whole thing. I would have been, it would have been good. Anyway, it's bad. I'm never going to, that's not a nickname, but don't give yourself a nickname. And even if someone else gives you a nickname, it's kind of like, oh, really? I'm going to have to start going by this now. So rare. I mean, the cool thing about nicknames that work is that it's a miracle.
Yeah.
Because they shouldn't work. And so when one does work, like The Process, because it's a nickname nobody has and it means something, then it's cool. And The Professional is not a cool nickname.
And I assume
I like that. I like the, it vaguely references the movie, which I like.
Yeah, in that he's like good at shooting, like the movie. And the movie's a good one. I get it.
Right.
But he's not that good at shooting.
Yes. And he's been on, he's been traded by teams very recently a lot.
Like, wouldn't so the fact that he's not the journeyman?
Yeah, the journeyman would make a lot more.
Yeah. Every time the Sixers call him a professional on Twitter, I want everyone to retweet it and call him the journeyman instead. And that's, I would love the nickname the journeyman. No one has the guts to just call it what it is, you know?
Yeah. Here are all the jerseys I've worn in the last whatever. No, it's not very good. Who else is, I mean, and the fact that we have two guys on the team with great nicknames is incredible. Even Dara's nickname, the homie, is great.
Yeah.
And Chacho. These are some good nicknames for the team, comparatively.
Yeah. What do we have to have a shitty one for? A made-up one?
Yeah, you don't need it. Don't force it.
Yeah.
Don't force it.
And then we barely talked about this, and I don't even, like, look. Jared Bayless, as the story goes, he tore the ligament in his wrist in Summer League, or not in Summer League, in training camp. Do we play the Suns at some point in training camp in our, so I think it was that game. And then they told him to have surgery and he tried to play through it. That's as the story goes. Who knows if that's exactly what happened. I think it's I don't really care that they lied to everybody the whole time. That is that he tore a ligament in his wrist, but I do guess retroactively care because if this was the previous regime, like this would be an enormous talking point, and yet somehow the guy who was supposed to be our starting point guard plays three games because of an injury they didn't tell anybody about, and then gets season-ending surgery 25 games into the season. So
yeah,
you know,
look. I mean, we can call out how it's bullshit and how they treated Hinkie versus how they treat Colangelo. I think they're probably starting to turn. I mean, Hinkie was there for 3 years, and maybe they just like the fact that there's veterans now. I don't know. I'm not going to speak for the beat writers, whatever. But it's bullshit. It's just bullshit. It's all fake. It's all like political nothing. Like Colangelo isn't talking. I don't blame Colangelo for not talking.
No,
there's nothing he needs to say. But it was Hinkie didn't have to talk either, and it was just your own dog shit narrative that was pushing all these things about him. And if you said, like, hey, we all get it, we can all think critically and understand that this is what it is, it sucks for now, but you can see what they're building. I get that you get tired of writing that story, but it's the same thing. We're in the same place. You shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't have scapegoated Hinkie like that for being smart and not feeling the need to talk to you. And now for Colangelo being like, well, what's it going to get me? Same thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't get you anything. I'm not going to scream at Colangelo for like not doing it because I don't care. He doesn't need to.
Yep.
But the people that blamed Hinkie for it and then are staying silent about Colangelo doing it, it's like, well, there's clearly a double standard there.
Yeah, and I'm just sort of bummed we don't get Bayless this year, to be quite honest with you. You could tell from the few games he played that he was going to be a good addition to the team, and he's sort of the right guy to play point while Ben Simmons plays, you know? And it's a bummer that we won't have him, I think, this year.
I mean, I don't – I like having – at this point, maybe it's like Stockholm syndrome to the idea of losing. But at this point, I like having things in my pocket in the future and forget about them.
Yeah.
And so
– Oh, Bayless is here next year.
Yeah, exactly. So next year I'll be like, all right, sure.
Yeah.
But and also this gives us – this ensures a full year of TJ McConnell, which I obviously need and love. And by the way, he really was the best player on the court in two of their last three games. So that's
– Both excruciating loss. Oh, no, the Detroit game.
No.
Right.
But last night was not great. I mean, he always has one of those – like in a, when they're losing, he'll always like steal the inbounds one time and get a layup by himself. Like that's just TJ, man. I love him.
He's got a gym, the wrestling coach. I always say because it was the wrestling coach in our high school. But when Mr. Gavin would come play basketball with us, he would like hustle too much and annoy everyone. And that's sort of like how TJ is. Like stop hustling so much.
That was also me. I would only when I get frustrated then I would start like really like hounding people at full court. That was so I empathize with that. He's also leading the team in steal percentage by quite a large margin. Him and Covington by a bit. He's a good defensive player. He's obviously doesn't have tremendous physical tools, but he's a good defensive player. And that there's not many good defensive point guards. There's just not. And I love him. I love him to death. I would like him to start shooting more because he was not an awful. His release obviously took forever last year when he shot threes.
Yeah, but, he had to like wind up him and Ish Smith like had to get all of their energy behind it.
Totally. But he shot more, and he's only taken 13 threes this year. You can see him just passing up everything. And I would like him to take a couple, keep some folks honest.
Real quick, I mentioned we talked about...
You're just waiting for me to stop talking about
TJ. Well, I don't know.
I know.
He's that good. So, but I'm glad that you like him a lot. You know, we all have our favorites. Looking back on last year, I really hated, even though it was half for show, I hated our Cannon versus Hollis Thompson thing because it made me be against Hollis Thompson, and I don't want to be against any Sixers. Very few Sixers I want to be against.
Yeah, there you go.
So real quick, the Dario at three thing, he should be playing four, not three. So, another guy that is out of position because of this whole nonsense with all these.
Yeah, I don't mind doing that as much and try in the hopes that you make him more versatile, especially because there will be a world where we start playing him and Simmons together.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
Someone's going to have to guard the three, and I don't mind just giving him like, hey, here's what it's like to guard threes. He's not, I like Dario very much, and I think he's having a nice rookie year, but he's not that important of a cornerstone to where if we're like, hey, let's try to build out his versatility. It's like a guy who plays shortstop also being like, hey, let's try you at second base in case we need to put you there. Like, I don't mind. I don't think it like stunts his development much aside from in the short term.
Would you like to give the information on the retweet Armageddon Congress?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay. So we talked about the team. Yeah. There's nothing else. Yeah. I mean, yeah, they're going to, I hope I would, they're, they won. Wait, right now they've won six games, six games. Guys, let's slow down. Six games is quite a bit.
Especially at this point in the year.
At this point in the year, they're on pace for what? Almost. What was it? Is it 20 or three?
Like
20-ish.
Yeah. How many games have they played? They're 6-19, 20, I think.
6-20 as of last night.
Yeah. So just under 20, I think, games. Yeah. So right on track.
25. Here we go. We're getting 25.
There's no way. No way. All right.
The Lakers pick is coming down, by the way.
Yes.
It's all happening. Anyway, Retweet Armageddon is. I've talked to a bunch of people about this, and I think this is, of all the things we did, the billboard is close, but I think this is the most ridiculous thing.
Yes.
I think this might be the, it is all of the Philadelphia-ness and all of the weirdness at once. It is the bitterness of the city where we come from and the total cultiness of the, this revolution that we've been a part of.
And
so. Go ahead.
Well, and I'll offer up to you, you know, there was a guy that emailed me. I don't know if he wants me to say his name or not, but offered to find all of the tweets and put them in one website so you could just log in and retweet them all from an embedded website.
Yeah.
I like that idea. I sort of also like the idea of everyone just like searching Twitter and people frantically trying to delete their tweets. And if they can find them, then they can delete them, you know?
Yeah.
So I like the idea, but I don't know if I want to give people – I like that it's a little bit harder, you know?
Yeah, it's harder and it is, and there's a franticness that'll be happening.
Yeah.
And, there will be people – there'll be ringleaders, and it'll – you know, if you follow any of us, Brandon especially,
there will be plenty out there.
Plenty to just retweet, retweet city.
And
anyway, so we decided we were talking amongst ourselves about who to have on this Congress. We like the idea of people coming from different or having a different role, everybody having a different like
or
part
background.
To play.
Yeah.
Background,
yeah,
something along those lines. So we obviously the two of us are on there.
Yep.
And maybe you're like the majority leader, I'm like the minority leader. I don't know if we want to make it too close to whatever. We'll figure it out. But so we wanted to get obviously, we wanted to get someone who covers the team on a more professional basis.
Yep.
So Derek Bodner will be on Reach and Armageddon. He said you talked to him. How was his response to that?
Yes, immediately. That's what he said. Yep. And by the way,
I can see Derek rolling his eyes a little bit more at it and being like, okay, fine.
Yeah, but, in fairness, I didn't ask him in person, but I think he is. By the way, he mentioned on Reddit the other day when I posted the bus trip on Reddit, Derek is going on the bus trip, which I think
is
hilarious. Maybe he's just covering it or something, but he's going on the bus trip. And
somebody's got to bring a Godner sign.
Yes, I definitely have to bring a Godner sign. And by the way, I saw Keith Pompey at Glenn Macnow's brewing company opened up another restaurant. I saw Keith Pompey there, and he mentioned to me if there was another bus trip to let him know so he can give us credit in the article like he did last year. So
there you go.
Yeah, we're going to get that. So Derek Bodner, of course, is the beat writer representation in the Retweet Armageddon Congress. Continue.
Yeah. And then we wanted to get someone who had worked for the team. I think that is that. That is an interesting wrinkle in it, just to differentiate some folks.
Yep.
And so we got Pat Croce. Just kidding. We got Max Rappaport as the representative.
Okay.
There.
Continue.
So I think it's solid so far. And then I wanted to get a national person in there.
National media.
National media person. So someone with a little bit more that's a little bit more stepped back from it, but still has. Still has a link to
the process.
Still linked to the process, and it's close enough. So we went with our friend, the Ringer's Danny Chow.
Yep,
Danny Chow. I g-chatted him. I was like, "Hey, man, quick question. just the thing." And so I like talked for like I just a long g-chat. And he's like, "All right, yeah, sounds good."
Yeah. Okay.
So it's just. It's like, how much information do you need? Just be like, you just have to be on an email chain. Okay, great.
Yeah.
So Danny Chow.
Yeah, Danny Chow, by the way, if you need his how connected he is, he actually wrote an article on Grantland about the Farewell Evan hashtag. So you can
find
that.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's very good.
Okay,
so Danny Chow. And then we got had to, obviously, get our own version of Spike Lee, our celebrity listener, on. So our friend Mike Weber, screenwriter and frequent yeller at Sixers games, at Sixers owners.
Yep.
Which is huge. So he's on there. How many is that?
That is, we have one more.
Six.
Yeah. Well, there's me, you.
Two more.
Oh, yeah.
So we wanted to bring in this is sort of a double duty, but I wanted to bring in folks from other Philadelphia sports teams into the fold. But also he's our lead fave guy. So Brandon Gauton, currently an Eagles writer, obviously, but also former Liberty Ballers guy and very connected to the podcast as well. He flashed some Retweet Armageddon leather the other day pulling out some old Pavorsky takes and old Wesley Sher takes and some of mine.
He's got everything, by the way.
He's got it all there. I don't know how he sifts through it. I would watch a documentary on Brandon Gouton's fave list. And I absolutely would see how he gets there.
And speaking of which, there is a guy, and I don't know him. He just seems like he's a normal lick facey follower. But his Twitter is at HamSinky. And I got to say, I'm not saying that he's on BLG's level, but anytime any of the like the retweetees, like the people who are being retweeted, do something dumb, he's got everything right away. Not just retweets, but articles and screenshots. And every time I ask him how he has all of it, he does not respond to me. So,
I love it.
So yeah. So if you should, of course, BLG needs to be your main source. But if you need a secondary source, I would go follow that guy. All right, continue.
Okay. I'm on the Sixers basketball reference page, and I just saw Tibor Pleiss's name, and I totally forgot that Tibor Pleiss getting paid by the Sixers this year. Very good. And then we got a Phillies writer to open it up a little bit more, and my friend Liz Rocher, who writes for The Good Fight, and good friends with Mike Bauman, also Louis Ballers, so we wanted to open it up there. I think it's good to have people on varying levels of Sixersdom. She's not a huge Sixers fan, but she enjoys us, and so I think the cursory awareness of what the process is without being so close to it, I think, is in the same way that Danny Chow is good to have. I think this is a good addition as well.
Yeah. Well, if you like, if you know, it may be some perspective in that she is a small step away from this insanity, like her
exactly.
And Chow may bring a little bit of perspective that maybe we need. So
totally. The political pundits are going to be all over this and how this affects the count.
So here's where this gets interesting. That is
we thought about looking for a Flyers person, but Brandon said it would be very on brand for us to not have a Flyers person on the podcast, on the Congress. So we do not have a Flyers person on the Congress.
Yeah. And I agree with him that is on brand, you know, and that's what they get for telling us not to tweet about the Sixers. Now they can't be on the retweet Armageddon Congress. So eat it.
There you go. Hockey's stupid. It's always been stupid.
So here is your chance, by the way, to be on the Retweet Armageddon Congress, is that we have reserved two spots, which would be spot number 9 and 10. We've reserved two spots for fans, for listeners. So we want one spot to be an in-town, like a local fan representative, and then another person out of town, so not in the Delaware Valley. Could be in a different country, could be in a different city, but we want two fans. So here's what you do. Go to writestorickysanchez.com. There will be a link in this post, and I'll also put it on the front of the page, where you can apply to be a member of the Retweet Armageddon Congress. You just have to fill out a couple of questions, give us your Twitter, give us your name, where you live, all that kind of stuff. We will whittle it down to maybe five, like five for each, and then let people vote on them, basically. That's it. So just go to writestorickysanchez.com, fill out the form there, and then we will follow up in a podcast upcoming to announce the finalists.
And just, I think, in case if you're new to the podcast, Retweet Armageddon is basically when the point of the Congress is to decide, get a majority vote. So there's going to be 10 people, so it would need to be a 6-4. 5-5 is a no.
Yep.
6-4 at least of when we will decide that it is time to commence Retweet Armageddon, which is the moment when we go back. Something good enough in Sixers land has to happen, specifically involving the process and seeds that Hinky has sowed, to go back through old tweets and old takes and retweet them all to the embarrassment and shame of the people who tweeted them, including very likely us.
Yes.
We will be
part of Retweet
on as well,
sure. We're all part of it. We're all part of it's a war where everybody dies, basically.
Yeah.
At the end. It's like, you know, in war games where they're playing. Have you ever seen war games?
I haven't, but okay. Go for it.
So in War Games, like, it's essentially like this computer that like Matthew Broderick is in it, and a computer that like is supposed to be controlling war or whatever, like our side of the war. And at the end, Matthew Broderick makes the computer play tic-tac-toe, so he figures out. The computer figures out that no one ever wins in war or whatever. Like, it's one of those 80s Cold War fear movies or whatever, because he plays tic-tac-toe over and over again and realizes nobody ever wins. That's what Retweet Armageddon is. We all win, but we all lose as well. So, yeah. So there you go. So we look forward to your applications to be in the Retweet Armageddon Congress as we continue to fall deeper, deeper into the hole that we have dug.
It's going to be good. Couple big winnable stretches happening right now.
Okay, what do we got coming up?
We got Brooklyn tomorrow.
All right.
The Pelicans.
Yep.
Tuesday. Suns, Kings, Jazz, Nuggets, Wolves, the Celtics, Nets, Knicks. That's a very winnable stretch.
Yeah. I would love to get revenge on the Timberwolves.
That'd be good. The Sixers also last night was a national game, so the Sixers always look shitty on national games.
Yeah, that's always.
Always. And most not national games, but especially national games.
Well, let's get a win or two, and let's trade Jahlil Okafor. Come on, let's get it done. Come on, Brian. I know you listen. Let's get it done.
Let's count. So 27. There are about 30 games until... Give or take 30 games until the trade deadline.
Yeah, I can't take 30 games of this.
I know. I was hoping to make it seem like less, but
it seems like forever. Yeah, they haven't even played 30 games this year, and
that's true.
You know, Jesus. Yeah. Okay. All right. The Rice to Ricky Sanchez podcast has been brought to you, as always, by LL Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rice to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged, 707 Walnut in Philly. Always at llpavorsky.com. Are you down with TTP?
Yeah, you know Lickface. Also, it's my mom's birthday today. Oh. Happy birthday to my mom.
Happy birthday, Mom.
There you go. All right, buddy.
All right, see you later.
See you later.